We're talking about what does it look like to be community? What does it look like when we're a community that seeks to know and be known by God and to know and be known by one another? And what would it look like if we took a year to really attack that and look at that and try as best we can in the human reality to cut the gap that exists between our relationships with God and others? And so this first 5 weeks, we're in week four of a five-week series, we've been walking through Dietrich Bonhoeffer's book, loosely walking through his book, Life Together. And some of you, I know, because I see it, I haven't seen you the last couple weeks, and so I just want to do a matter of review. And for some of you, this is going to be exactly that. It's going to be a review, just very quick. So we can all be on the same page as we continue to go deeper into this work that Bonhoeffer gave us. Week one was all about the fact that we've been created in community, that from the birth of the church, the day of Pentecost, God's Spirit is poured out on all of those who were waiting there, and they were given gifts, and as a response, the church is born. And one of the realities of the church is that they would meet together, they would serve together, they would learn together, they would share everything they had with one another. And this community was this really unique group of people that were held together by the grace and love of Jesus Christ. And so not only were we created in community, but 2 weeks ago we talked about the fact that in this community we're bound to one another, not because of how we like each other or prefer one another, but because we're bound together through God's love. That we were held together in community for harmony. It's Paul's letter to the Colossians. He says, you want to know what it takes to do life together. You want to know what it takes to be community. You got to clothe yourselves with love. You literally let God's love define the way in which you see the people around you. Because when it's our preferences and our opinions, we're all going to come up short. I mean, I hate to break it to you, but you're not perfect. Neither am I. And I'm going to disappoint you, and you're going to disappoint me, and none of us are going to be able to fulfill all of each other's needs, which drove us to last week's topic about the fact that in order to be a healthy part of a community, we need to have time in solitude. Not loneliness, but a time that we can set apart to be in relationship with God. That even Jesus, even in the rhythm of Jesus' life, he often went off to a quiet place so he could connect with the God who'd called him, whose kingdom he was bringing about in this world. And so many of us exert so much energy that we've lost the ability to be quiet. And in order to, Bonhoeffer says, the one who is unable to be alone should be wary of being in community. And the one who cannot be in community should be wary of being alone. But those two blend together in perfect harmony. Well, this week we're going to go a step farther. And this week in Bonhoeffer's book, I find is probably one of the most challenging weeks in it, but one of the most life-giving parts of it as well. Because in it, you could say, Jeremy, I agree with you. I agree the fact that we've been created for community. I know that. My heart yearns for that. It desires that. Even if I'm an introvert, I know that I need to be plugged into other people. And I know that we need to love one another. And I get and I understand the need to have Sabbath, to have a time to connect with God, but I want to know if we're going to talk about doing life together, if we're going to talk about ministry, and if we're going to talk about what the goal and the purpose of the church is, then how do I know what my purpose is? How do I know what my peace, what my place, what my role is? Or do I even have a place, a peace, or a role in it at all? Maybe you've thought for most of your life that what you have to offer or what you could contribute wouldn't be needed for anything. You'd say, I'd love to have a role, a purpose, a place in the community, in the church, what God is doing, and I'd love to be a part of what we're talking about, but I don't see it. I don't see it in me. Well, God does. I think sometimes, and one of the benefits I think that we're going to find through this year, I hope and I pray that we do. I think sometimes one of the things that kind of gets in the way of us as we are church with one another is the fact that we think, if I wasn't here, if I was absent today, or if somehow I left the church and I wasn't a part of it anymore, you wouldn't even notice and you wouldn't even miss me. And I have to beg to differ with you, respectfully. If you don't think that you have any type of significance to the kingdom of God, moving in this world, to Lutheran Church of Hope, I disagree with you. I mean, you can come and talk to me after worship. I'll disagree with you all day long about that, because I believe that you are created, that we are all created in God's image. And as we say at the beginning of every single worship service here, we don't say it because it's catchy. We say it because we mean it. And maybe this is the first time somebody has ever said something like this to you before, but we believe it as strongly as we could believe anything else. We don't believe that you are here by accident. No matter what it was that brought you here today, we believe that God had a role in that. And that God is up to the business of transforming lives in us and through us. But one of the difficulties as we find our place that Bonhoeffer gets to in this fourth chapter is kind of the conflict that can exist in community. It's interesting. Bonhoeffer says it in the very beginning of his fourth chapter, that so many times when we find ourselves in committee, rather than finding this beautiful dance, rather than finding this harmony, rather than finding the reality that God has created us all on purpose for a purpose, and that all of our gifts and our abilities and our talents would blend together to create a fuller picture, we find ourselves playing the compare game. Saying, in order to be important, you need to be like this, or you need to be less like that, or I need to be more like this. Bonhoeffer says, he uses very male-driven language. It's a product of the time in which he wrote. So anytime Bonhoeffer says man, think men and women. Anytime he uses he, think about he or she. He says, it's a struggle of the natural man. It's the struggle of the natural human for self-justification. He finds it only in comparing himself with others, in condemning and judging others. What does Bonhoeffer mean? One of the most difficult things about being a part of a community is we base our value in comparison to the people around us. That you say, well, unless I can sing a song like Alyssa, then I'm not truly that important. Or you hear Alyssa sing the way that she sang that offering song, which was incredibly beautiful, and you can only hear it through the ears of kind of criticizing or critiquing or judging and saying, she should have done more of this, or she should have done less of this, or oop, I think she may have missed a note there. And everything, it becomes about judging rather than experiencing or being a part of. And this isn't anything that's new for us today. Wasn't anything that was new for Bonhoeffer. In the book of Ecclesiastes, it says, generations come and generations go, but there's nothing new. History and cultures and people and problems have a way of repeating themselves. It's Jesus and his disciples. It's in Luke's gospel, Luke's story of Jesus' life. Jesus and his disciples had been doing some incredible things. I mean, Jesus had sent his disciples out. We talked about this last week just a little bit. He had sent his disciples out to go and to do ministry, to do what he'd called them to do. He didn't say that only the miracles happen when you're with me. He says, go and call upon my name. By using my name, the same power will be available to you. And the disciples come back and their minds blowing. And then a crowd gathers as they're trying to go and find that quiet place. And the crowds are so enamored with who Jesus is and what Jesus is doing that they won't leave him alone. And so as the crowds come, the disciples start to freak out and they say, Jesus, what are we going to do? All these people, they're going to want something from us. They're going to want something to eat and we don't have anything to feed them with. Jesus says, well, what do we have on hand? They say, well, we have 5 loaves of bread and we have 2 fish. Jesus says, well, feed them with that. What? You got to be kidding. We don't have what it takes. We don't have enough. And Jesus says, well, I'll decide that. Just go out and do it. So they go out and they start to divide the food among themselves. And they feed the masses. And rather than celebrating it, all of a sudden, they start to compare their notes on one another. It's Luke chapter 9. Then his disciples began arguing. Some translation will say there was a disagreement that arose between them. And they started to determine and to try to decide and to figure out who was the greatest. You can imagine they're talking about all the things that they did when they went out two by two to go to do Jesus' ministry. And Thomas is saying to Peter, yeah, Peter, that's a great story, but you never would have guessed what I was able to do. And Bartholomew says, well, that was nothing. You should have seen what I... And they start to base what they did on what their experience was, and they start to push down each other's. And Jesus says, it's not going to be like that with us. It's not about you. No offense, Jesus says. It's not about who's the greatest. It's not about who has the most wonderful or the greatest story. In fact, and Jesus pulls a child in front of him. In order to be the greatest, you must become the least. Because it's not about you. It's about God. And about what God can do through you. Through any of you. You didn't heal the sick, Jesus said. You called on my name and you were able to do incredible things. It's in Paul's letter to the Romans, Paul spends a lot of his time, if you look at the New Testament, there's a lot of books like Galatians, Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, 1st and 2nd Corinthians, Romans. These are all letters that were written to churches, some of them that are experiencing joy, some of them that are experiencing struggle. And one of the struggle that existed in a lot of the early churches was this compare game, this comparison game. And they'd lost their way. And Paul's letter to the church in Ephesus, which is the book of Ephesians, is all about reminding them that they're called to be one with one another. Paul's letters to the Corinthians, to the church in Corinth, is addressed to people who were trying to rank one another about what gift was the most important part in the church. And then Paul writes this letter to the church in Rome. And at the time of Jesus, Rome was the most powerful place in the world. So you can imagine the culture in which his message is being brought into, that Paul is writing into, is one where ranking was something that was quite normal, familiar to them. So Paul writes about the power of God and the power of Christ and the power of his death and his resurrection. It says that any of you that have been joined to him in his death will be joined to him in his life. And there's nothing in all of creation that can separate you from his love, Paul says in Romans 8. And then we get to kind of Paul's concluding thoughts starting in Romans 12. And he starts with this curious word, and he says, therefore. Could be translated as, and so, in summary, as a result. Paul says, as a result of everything, the reality of who God is, of who Christ is, of what Jesus has done, and the power of his Spirit, because of all of these things, Paul says, don't conform to the patterns of the thoughts of this world any longer. You don't have to use the same measuring stick that you've been measured against any longer. That doesn't hold any water in this new kingdom that has come because of Jesus. Don't have to conform to the thoughts and the patterns of this world. But Paul says, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And then he says, but I give you this warning. Don't think that you're better than you really are. Because when we talk about community, there's no greater roadblock that we face than that which would cause us to look at each other with suspicion or doubt. Biggest thing that stands in the way of community is our humanity. This year, I've been watching one of my sports teams. I don't get the chance to speak up about a lot of the teams that I follow. I'm a Minnesota sports fan, and they're all terrible. Every single one of the teams is terrible. I was telling somebody before worship today, the last time I talked about one of my teams in worship was when the Vikings were 5-0. They went 2-9 2-7 the rest of the season. So I'm taking a big risk, but I grew up in Fargo, North Dakota, and it's hockey land USA. I didn't play hockey, can't play hockey, but my team, the Minnesota Wild, they have the second best record in the NHL right now. They're the best team in the Western Conference. They've been the hottest team for the last 3 months. They're incredible. And the interesting thing is this past offseason, they got a new coach. But other than their coach, nothing has changed for this team. They are almost the exact same team this year than they were last year and the year before that. And everybody's been trying to figure out what's the difference, what's changed. How is this new coach getting the same exact players to do different things? Well, because he's changed it from competition into combination. In hockey, there are 6 players on the ice at each time. 3 forwards, 2 defensemen, and a goalie. 3 forwards, there's a center and 2 wings. And those players can only go for about 45 seconds to a minute at a time, and then they need a rest. Such a fast game. And so you have 4 lines, you have 4 different forwards that will play in a game. But most teams will have 2 lines that are star-studded, and the other 2 lines play garbage time or will play time just to fill some gaps. But the new coach of the Wild said it's not going to be like that with us. Because then it all becomes about a competition to see who's going to be on the best line. And then lines start to play off of one another. Or people think because they're a part of one line that they're not as important, or they're more individually focused. Calls to mind the story of the 1980 U.S. Olympic hockey team, Miracle on Ice, 17 years ago this year. There's a guy by the name of Herb Brooks who was called to coach a group of college all-stars. At that time, nobody could compete with the Russians. The Russians were the most powerful hockey team in the world. Herb Brooks gets this group of college all-stars, and he has to try to get them to play with one another, but they don't understand it. They're still towing the lines of their college rivalries. So after one of their exhibition games, Herb Brooks is sick of it. He can't understand why they can't see that the potential that exists if they would start doing things with one another. If they would start to see that each other is an ally of one another and not an enemy. So rather than just tell them about it, he starts to try to skate it out of them. He's going to literally try to drive them to the point of exhaustion to see if they'll finally get rid of themselves. Gets them on the line. He says, skate. Again, there and back, up and down the rink, to the point where his assistant coaches are saying, Brooks, we can't do, you're literally going to kill them. Throughout the whole thing, he keeps asking, what's your name? Who do you play for? Every one of them toes the line of that college team and doesn't identify what their true team is. Players from that team will say that it was that moment. It was that moment that not just everything in their season changed, but everything in their lives changed. He says, you're not called to be common, to be ordinary. You're called to something greater. When it's all about you, it gets to be very ordinary. When it's all about you, it's about the limits that you can control on your own. But he says, but there's something greater that could happen if you would just start to work with one another. This is what Paul is talking about to the church in Rome. He says, don't think that you're better than you are. Not because there's anything wrong with you. No, there isn't anything wrong with you at all. God created you. God created you uniquely, purposefully, specifically. And you are who you are, and there will never be another you on the face of this planet. I mean, just humor me for a second. Take a look at your fingertips. For some of you, you can see your fingerprints on your fingertips. You can see them when you're really close. Some of us, we got to hold them back a little bit more. Because age has gotten the best of us. But look at them. Talking about this with our kids just not too long ago. Did you know? I mean, how many billion people are on the planet right now? Did you know that there is not only nobody else on the planet right now that bears the same prints on their fingers that you do? But did you also know that there never has been either, nor will there ever be from this point on, that the prints that you have on your hands could never be duplicated. I mean, you think about the people who've made the biggest imprint on your life. You say my life bears the prints of that person and the impact that they've had. They're all over me. They had such an impact on my life, I'll never be the same. You want to know why they were able to do that with you? Because God gave them that ability. Whether they knew it or not, that God gave them the unique ability to make an imprint on your life. That you say, like Mike Iruzioni said, that changed everything for you. I mean, it's not about going, okay, how do yours look and how do mine look? And I'm going to try to tell you that my fingerprints are better. How foolish would that be? You would have no basis for an argument. Then why do we do it with our lives? Why do we do it looking at other people's lives? The imprint that you can make in this world, nobody else can. It doesn't matter how hard they try. They can't be you. That's why Paul says, he says, we're many parts of one body. And boy, does this go against what kind of the world can say sometimes. He said, we all belong to each other. We all need one another. We can't do this without each other. Could say to you, he'd say, okay, I think you need to go and restock the food shelves of 90 pantries in central Iowa. And you'd say, I could never do that. But we can do it together, can't we? Did it last year? Well, last year was 87. We're going for 90 this year. We belong to one another. In his grace, Paul says, God has given us the ability to do certain things well. So do what you do and do it well, because God has given you that imprint in this world to make a difference, to make a change. Out in the lobby as you leave, it's our Go Serve Fair, where we have our mission partners, where you can ask Matt McNeese, who's the co-director of our missions here at Hope, but maybe where you could go serve and make a difference in this world. But it's not just going on a mission trip, is it? It's in your families. It's at your work. It's students, I want you to hear this. If you go to school right now, I just want your attention for a minute. Do you know the difference you can make in your school? There are kids who aren't being treated well. God says, I've given you the ability to go and to make a difference, to stand up for what's right, to love, truly love. But adults, we can do the same thing, can't we? Maybe we need to learn from our kids. I mean, because it's not just about the Super Bowl food drive next weekend. It's about the rest of our lives. It's called the church. Earlier I said, some of us think if I weren't here next week, nobody would notice. It wouldn't make a difference. Oh yeah, it would. Because you are created in the image of God. And you're a part of our team. Whether you like it or not, we need you. Paul says, give everything you have to God because he gave it all to you. That's the way we worship him.